Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas, and once again, I'm alone as we continue to be responsible. Later on in the show, though, we'll be joined by the likes of Hercules Gomez, Julian Moron, and Ali Moreno. Plus, we've found some real highlights, not just people kicking around toilet paper, actual matches. We'll bring you the highlights of those a little later on. But for now, we are joined by our head writer, Gab Marcotti, and also our La Liga expert, Sid Lowe, is with us. Sid, I want to start with you. Away from football, obviously, Spain has been hit hard. How are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing too badly. I mean, and obviously, the strange thing, more than anything else, is that this is actually only the seventh day. The lockdown started last Saturday. It's Friday. It feels like a very, very long time. It feels like not just a different era, but a different world, the one that we left behind when Atletico Madrid beat Liverpool at Anfield. That's only 10 days ago. It feels like such a long time.
Obviously, though, we're here to discuss soccer and how it will continue going forward. Just looking at La Liga and the latest plans, Sid, suggesting that we could see games being played, what, once every 48 hours teams could be playing.
Yeah, essentially because La Liga, with Javier Tebas, the president, at the forefront of this, is determined to get this finished, and also determined to get it finished before the end of June. Now, the Federation has said that if it has to go on beyond the end of June, then so be it. They said, look, yes, our target too is the 30th of June, but if it needs to go into July, if it needs to go beyond that, then so be it. The league is much, much more determined to get it wrapped up that little bit quicker, because partly, of course, they know that there are going to be problems with players' contracts and so on. La Liga have said that they would like to restart at the latest by the middle of May. And of course, if they were to do that, that means 6 weeks to squeeze in 11-12 games. Now, that necessitates, because there will be Champions League games to play as well, making games come in every two and a half, three days. And so, yes, that's essentially the position they're in. They also, of course, the league are much more open than the Federation to the idea of, if needs be, playing these games behind closed doors. But they are determined that this has to get finished. The problem is that all of the optimism from the president of the league is based on, well, optimism. Of course, we just don't know where we're going to be in terms of the health situation at that point to know whether or not teams can go back to playing football again.
And this is it, Sid, because of course we've seen developing over the last few days a number of players. We talked about Alaves a couple of days ago, their players being infected as well.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there are two different elements to this. One is the health situation across the whole country, and the other is the health condition of the players themselves. And this is obviously one of the reasons why the league is talking about the possibility of playing behind closed doors, because they believe, and they did put tests around to all of the clubs the other day to test the players for coronavirus. Some of the clubs, by the way, gave those tests back and said they didn't want to do them because the tests should be used for those who really need it, the vulnerable, the elderly, the already ill. But the league, what they want to do, obviously, is to be able to isolate the players, know that the players are fit enough to play, and then say, OK, even if the health situation across the country isn't good, we can get those players fit, we can get them healthy, and we can keep them in isolation, even if that isolation involves being on a football pitch and playing matches, we can get those games played, we can get the fixture list fulfilled, and we can get those games put on television. That, I think, at the moment is the thinking of La Liga. Now, look, obviously, in an ideal world, which I think we all realise this now isn't, in an ideal world, there is some sort of solution to this crisis, and there is some solution to the virus, and the football can go ahead as normal. But nobody truly believes, at the moment at least, that that's going to be possible in the foreseeable future.
Meanwhile, Gab, those images that we've seen just broadcast around the world about what's been happening in Italy has just resonated so personally with people. It seems strange that you see clubs coming out that maybe Lazio are going to restart training on Monday.
Yeah, it looks like it's not going to happen now. Basically, both the Federation and the league and the players basically telling the Lazio president, Claudio Lotito, be very careful, because if you want training to restart on Monday, you'll be the only guy there. But certainly, I mean, especially today, the highest death toll yet in Italy, the highest single day death toll. And I think a lot of people are taking a much more sobering look at this. There's no question that obviously they're going to have to start training again before they start playing again. But the general consensus seems to be a couple of weeks. and then we go and play again. You know, not this idea that, hey, people in factories, supply chain workers, hospital workers, those guys are all going to work, so you footballers need to go to work too, which seems to be Lotito's message.
Gab Marconi, thank you very much. We'll let you go, Gab. Sid, stay with us. Just a reminder, for more of Gab, you can download the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available over on the website. Meanwhile, the front page of Sport, the Catalan newspaper in Spain, saying that Quique Setién will continue at the start of next season. Well, Sid Lowe with us, and we're also joined by Julien Laurent to discuss this. Jules, I want to start with you because, of course, you were the one who were leading the charge. Valverde, terrible. He's everything that's wrong with Barcelona. Quique Setién hasn't exactly set the world on fire, has he? Are you surprised Barca have made this decision to keep him?
I'm not surprised, personally. I thought it was always going to be harsh to sack him at the end of this season, considering the context he had when he arrived and how difficult things were, and I guess unsettled in a way, and he's tried to do his things. If you remember at the beginning of his tenure, just after he arrived, I think he tried to change things too quickly, the formation. He went with that back three, for example, and then reverted back to a back four that was more what the players were used to before him. But I think there's a lot of good things that he's done. Yes, of course, there were some not so good things, and the defeat in the Clásico at the Bernabeu hurt them and will hurt them a lot. But they're still very much in the title race, in the Champions League as well. They can still go through to the quarterfinals against Napoli. So I think that we've seen enough to give him a full season with a full pre-season, with a full transfer window as well, to try to make this team and these things a bit better.
Sid, how much substance is there to this story?
Well, look, I think the fundamental thing is you have to look at this story in its context, in the moment. And of course, we're in a situation in which none of the clubs know what's going to happen next. All of the clubs do now know, and to put this specifically in the Barcelona context, that there will be no European Championships in the summer. Now, Barcelona's plan, of course, was Ronald Koeman. Ronald Koeman after the European Championships. Well, that after the European Championships has just been put back by an entire year. And so I think that this is really a response to the current situation of everybody kind of being in a holding pattern, in a moment of waiting, where it's not really possible to make a proper judgment on whether Setién has been good for Barcelona or not. And it's virtually impossible, I think, to make any kind of judgment in terms of which direction Barcelona are going in, because we don't even know when this season will start. We don't know when the next season will start. Sorry, when this season will end. We don't know when the next season will start. And so I think this is a decision made based fundamentally on the context of the moment in which it's being made more than anything else.
What have the fans made of his tenure so far, Sid?
Well, I think, I mean, a little as Jules was saying, the fans probably think it's too early. I think the fans have seen some things that they like. They've seen a team that wants the ball a bit more. They've seen a team that wants to maintain possession, that wants to build from the back. They've seen some bad moments in that. And of course, they saw them beaten in the Clásico by Real Madrid, which always does a huge amount of damage to any manager. But I also think that they've recognised the fans, and this is perhaps something that they didn't do with Valverde, and they should have done, but they've done with Setién, is that there's been a much broader recognition and, I think, acceptance of the fact that Barcelona's problems are far, far deeper than just the coach.
Meanwhile, we take a look at the front page of AS, similar, but talking about Zinedine Zidane. You know, he will continue as head coach at the start of next season. Obviously, it hasn't been the best season, certainly so far, for Real Madrid, Sid. Is this a surprise?
No, it's not. And I must admit, there's a bit of me that thinks that this is even less of a story in a way than the Setién one, because, I mean, it would have been extraordinary if at this stage of this season, given the fact that Real Madrid are still in the Champions League, given the fact that they're very much in the title race, although they're 2 points behind Barcelona, they beat Barcelona in the Clásico, that's only one victory away from being top of the table. It's far, far closer to competing for the league title than they've done in the last two seasons. It would have been extraordinary for anyone to have seriously been projecting the idea that Zidane doesn't continue. Now, if that idea is to emerge, and by the way, I'm not ruling out it emerging, it will be when this season comes to an end and we have no idea when or in what condition that will happen, and things have gone very badly. But right now, I just don't think there's any scenario at all in which you can justify or even take that decision.
Meanwhile, Kieran Trippier, of course, at Atleti for his first season. He's responded to critics regarding the way in which they played at Anfield to make it through against Liverpool in the Champions League. He came out and said, people have this perception that we're a defensive side, but I think they're getting too carried away with the way we played against Liverpool. If you go there and go toe-to-toe with Liverpool, you're going to get beat 6-0. You see pundits complaining because we did defend, but did they expect us to go there and play attacking football? We knew they would blow up because of the amount of pressure they'd applied and the amount of energy they'd put into the game. We knew they'd slow down. It took us over 100 minutes, but we won 3-2. Liverpool didn't put their chances away, and we beat them in both legs. It worked. Jules, what do you make of that comment?
Yes, of course it worked. It worked on both legs, and credit goes to Simeone and to the players, the team. They did really well in the way they managed those games, the way they coped, the way they defended as well. And Kieran Trippier, I can hear him, no problem. He has to be honest as well. You know, of course they're a defensive side. That's what Simeone does. And if you look at the numbers in terms of goals scored, it's very average. In terms of goal conceded, it's so much better. They have a very strong defense. Although they create some chances, the problem they have right now is they don't have Antoine Griezmann to score most of those chances anymore. So there will still be a very solid team, a very defensive team at heart. And I think that's the values that Simeone is passing on to that team and onto that dressing room. That doesn't mean that they never attack, because they do attack, and we see on the expected goals, for example, or the chances that they create that they don't always take, that the chances are there. And yet they just don't have a goal scorer, a proper prolific goal scorer this season to take them. But overall, they will always be mostly a defensive team than an attacking team anyway.
I mean, I think there has been a backlash here, because I think there's been a recognition, quite honestly, that Atletico Madrid escaped. And that they escaped with a victory that no one anticipated, and that wasn't necessarily a product of what Trippier is talking about. And it's very interesting, Trippier, I mean, obviously, look, he comes to Atletico Madrid in part because he wants to learn to defend, and he said that very explicitly, that the attacking side of the game as a fullback he was very good at. He wants to be learn to be good at the things that Atletico do so well, which is the defensive side of it. I think when Trippier says it worked, he's right. But the problem is that in his analysis, which is very in-depth, and actually I'm very grateful for a player to have that kind of level of analysis or at least discussion in any case, but the problem is that him saying it worked is not the same as saying it was always going to work. Mm. Now, you watched the reality of the second leg, maybe not the first, but the second leg, and it wasn't always going to work at all. They rode their luck at times. They escaped alive into extra time, which no one really anticipated. And so that's been part of the response in Spain. There's been no real kind of backlash, no real sort of being hyper-defensive of Atletico and saying, no, how dare you say this about them? Because everybody saw the game. And everybody saw a game that Liverpool could have won 5-0. And in Spain, what people have said, and I really quite like this as well, is they have been hugely eulogistic towards Liverpool. They've said this is a fantastic thing that Atletico have done. It's historic. It's a fantastic achievement. They held on brilliantly. They knew how to suffer. They knew how to struggle. They knew how to come through it. But the reason they had to do all those things was because they came up against a side that we think are better than anyone we've seen all season. And genuinely, in that game at Anfield, I think we saw a performance from Liverpool that we haven't seen from a Spanish team all season.
Meanwhile, Sid, we've been speculating about the future of Coutinho over the last few days. For you, does he still have a role in the modern game? Can he still be that elite level that he brought to Liverpool?
I think it depends who he's surrounded by, and I think it depends on the kind of the demands you make of him. Bear in mind that when Coutinho went to Barcelona, there were one of two options for him. One was to be part of a front three, but then you still want the front three to press and to close people down. And if Suarez is getting a little bit older and a little bit slower, and Messi doesn't really do that anyway, you certainly cannot afford a third player who's doing it. The other option for Coutinho was to play in the middle of midfield as one of the three in a kind of Andres Iniesta position. And maybe that's not his natural role. Maybe that's not where he performs best. So I have absolutely no doubt that Coutinho has the quality, the talent, and indeed the mobility and the athleticism to be a really, really good player for a club where he fits perfectly. But I must confess, at the moment at least, I'm not sure if Barcelona is that club.
And Jules, we've seen him over the last 24 hours linked to Manchester United. It's difficult to put up an argument that that's the club for him either.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of it will depend on Pogba and what is going to happen with him, because if you keep Pogba and you have Bruno Fernandes, there's no room anywhere for Coutinho, not even in a front three, you know, above Pogba and Bruno Fernandes in the midfield three, because I just don't think that would work. If Pogba goes and you think that maybe Coutinho, as Sid just explained, can drop a bit deeper and play in the midfield three, then that might work. But even as a front three player, wide left or right on the right, I still don't think that's his best position. For me, a team has to be built around him and has to play for Coutinho all the time. That's where I thought he was so good at Liverpool, because he was involved in everything. I'm not sure with Bruno Fernandes being in the form that he is now, and you can just expect him to get better and better for next season as well with United, that Coutinho has a role in that team if Bruno is there at that kind of level.
Meanwhile, Jules, you've been writing over on ESPNFC.com about the future of Lamar. Of course, it just has not worked out at Atleti. Manchester United, again, linked with him.
Yeah, linked with him, and they're going to be far than just being linked. They had a meeting with his people, which is again normal at this stage of the season. People at United will meet a lot of agents, a lot of players. They will have a lot of discussions. That doesn't mean they will sign Thomas Lemar, but they're interested in him, like they were before he decided to go to Atletico Madrid after, you know, the incredible years that he had with Monaco. It hasn't worked out for him in Spain. I think it's quite clear to everyone. He's only 24 years of age, so he's still young enough to go to the next level and to go to another club where he will play better and have better performances. It's just that I think Simeone and Atletico style just didn't suit him at all. And I think he knew that before going there. He wanted to still go there and improve and work a bit like Trippier, work on the other side of his game that he could improve. But things are just not working out, and he needs to get out of there. The only question mark we have now is how much Atletico we want for someone that they bought 18 months ago for 70 million euros. They could be a bit greedy with the transfer fee. But other than that, I still think he's appealing to a lot of big clubs.
Makes you think, so why on earth did they buy him in the first place?
Well, I mean, it's baffling, really. And on this occasion, I kind of feel like turning to Jules and saying, is this guy a good footballer? Because there has been no evidence of it at all at Atletico Madrid. And I feel some sympathy for him, because just as we were saying that Kieran Trippier came to Atletico Madrid to try and learn that side of the game, and you look at Lamar and you think, well, he's gone to the wrong club. He's gone to the wrong club. It's not the right kind of manager. It's not the right kind of approach to enable him to be the player that we all thought he could be. Now, we've talked about this lots and lots of times, this kind of false start that Atletico Madrid have had over the last two or three years. It's happened two or three times where they've sort of looked like they were going to evolve into something different, and it just doesn't happen, and they come back a little bit to what they know. And for Lamar, for whatever reason, whether it's stylistic, whether it's about personality, whether it's about the place on the pitch, it just hasn't worked for him. And genuinely, seen from a Spanish perspective, I can't think of a single full 90 minutes of really brilliant football from him. Not one.
Quickly, Jules, he's still got it.
I think he's still got it, but in the right team, like Sid said, with the right manager. I think he went there because he thought that he would get better in the work ethic, in the attitude, in the discipline and all of that. But instead, he actually went there and has never really played his kind of football, because the team never played that kind of football. And I just don't think he's got the personality either to do well in that kind of environment. So the better he leaves, the sooner he leaves, sorry, I think the better it is for everyone, not just him, but Atleti as well.
Jules and Sid, thank you very much. Be sure to stay safe. And just a reminder, keep up to date with all the latest transfer news. You can go over to ESPNFC.com and click on Transfer Talk.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Just a reminder, plenty of content still available over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe. And we welcome to the show now, Hercules Gomez is with us, as is Captain Alejandro Moreno. Thanks for joining us, boys. Herc, you've, of course, been talking to some of the MLS players, obviously affected by this. How are they coping? How are they keeping fit?
It's difficult. Not only the players, I've spoken to some people in the coaching trees, if you will, and general management. It's very difficult. I mean, players can't get in groups to work out. Some of these players don't have access to proper facilities. If you're in a city like Los Angeles, for example, or New York, the gyms are closed, so you can't go there. You can maybe go outside for a run, but you don't have access to proper equipment to really keep yourself in shape. And speaking to one MLS player today, told me doesn't really know how hard he can go because there are a lot of rumors about actually when this league will start up. I know that I know they've been saying May 10th is the actual date when we'll get things going again, but everything that I've been hearing, everything that we've been seeing out of the NBA, which is what MLS is kind of following suit, it's looking more like June, July-ish. So players are right now in this sort of limbo space where they don't really know what to do. They need to maintain some sort of shape, but as Ali will surely tell you, a footballer needs as much as he can in order to stay in shape, and it's not just about running, so that can only take you so far. So what do? They're kind of in this limbo space.
Ali, of course, you're used to solitude in your life, but, you know, as a player, this has got to be difficult, yeah?
Are you suggesting that social distancing is not a problem for me?
I would suggest you've been training about it for a long time.
Look, it is difficult for players, and certainly so when you don't quite know when is it that you have to be ready. See, players are all about routines. Players are all about knowing exactly, okay, I have 3 weeks until preseason. This is what I need to do in order to be ready. But when you don't know exactly when you're about to start, then you also don't quite know how to go about keeping that training and maintaining a level of fitness. The other thing I would say is that because players are somewhat unaware as to what the future holds in terms of when they start to play, they're also concerned about what's going on at home. They're also concerned about their families and loved ones and keeping everybody healthy in their own households. And so you have your attention divided into all sorts of different directions, but the most important is that people around you and those that you love stay healthy. And so while you want to keep an eye on staying fit, you're saying to yourself, okay, what do I really have to worry about here? Staying fit or taking care of my family? And can I balance those things? And finding that balance can be tricky at times.
Meanwhile, Jeff Carlisle has been busy over on the website looking at the depth of the U.S. men's national team. He's come up with this 11 and then the backup to that starting 11. What do you make of it, Herc?
I actually don't mind it one bit. If you look at the goalkeeper, I don't think there's a question right now. Most people would give it a Zach Steffen. Dest on the left. I like Brooks Long. That's actually mine. The only doubt I have in this whole lineup is Cannon over Yedlin. And I know what you're going to say. Yedlin has proven to be prone to mistakes at times, but still a Premier League defender. I don't care if he's gotten benched. He's playing at the highest level over a player who's relatively unproven. And if you look at the lineup, especially up front, the one glaring player there is Gio Reyna. I'm one of those people that believes Gio Reyna is primed for big things, and he's ready, and at his age and where he's playing, CONCACAF shouldn't be an issue, and you should give him those reins. I like this lineup, with the exception of that right back. This would be the first choice lineup for me.
Herc, you can't make it like some sort of extreme sentence that Gio Reyna's going to be great, as if you're grasping. You're the only one who thinks that.
No, but we're in CONCACAF. You know, this is a player playing in Champions League. This is a player playing for Borussia Dortmund. This is the U.S. men's national team today. Give him to me, please. Put him in my veins right now. This is exactly the type of player the U.S. men's national team needs. We don't have the luxury of saying, oh, you know what, you're 17 and you're playing Champions League football and you're playing in one of the best teams in the world, but you got to wait because this is CONCACAF and we want the big boys out.
Ali, what do you make of that 11 and the backup to it?
Yeah, can I just tell you that I don't mind the personnel available on the field. What I would say, though, is that you look at a bunch of players that, with their club teams, they're not playing in the same positions that they would play in this lineup. So Tyler Adams plays on the outside. He doesn't play in the inside with his club team. And so now he would be playing that role in which he would be a natural outlet to the back line, which may very well be his natural position, but it's not what he's doing on a daily basis. Christian Pulisic plays out wide for Chelsea. He's not playing in an inside position with his with the club team. And now with the national team, we're pretending that he's going to be that guy that will transition the team forward and would have freedom to move about. Maybe that's the case, but it's not what he's doing on a daily basis. And so I continue to see players that may not be in the positions that they do with their club on a daily basis, on daily training, whenever it is that they get back to their club teams, and now we are expecting them to show up 3 days later with a national team and say, you know what, this is what we want you to do for us, and we want you to do the best job you can. Well, it's different when you have different roles with your club team, and then 3 days later you're expected to perform on your national team. I think there's a transition there that we're not taking into account.
Meanwhile, Ali, as Herc mentioned, lots of speculation about when the season will start. Obviously, that will have an impact on when it will finish. And it will also, subsequently, have an impact on when we might see the return of Josef Martinez. Of course, this ACL earlier in the season, we could be in a situation where he could be back before the end of the campaign.
Not that Josef Martinez would want a pandemic to take place in order for him to get back onto the field. However, given the scenario that we have in place, he may just be able to take advantage of this. He may be able to make good of a situation that is incredibly negative for the rest of the world, but for him, because he has pushed the season to a later, essentially, starting date and a finishing date, it may just put him into a path in which he could get back towards the end of the season. Now, the big question is, what kind of version of Josef Martinez are you really going to get in recovering from an ACL injury? The other thing that you're going to have to ask, and it's a question that really Atlanta United is going to have to answer, what kind of investment do they put in a player that could take the place of Josef Martinez? Is it going to be just a guy who's just for the time being, or is it going to be a guy that truly can give you the goals that Josef Martinez was giving you before? And if that's the case and you're Josef Martinez, you have to really evaluate, well, do I really push it and try to get back towards the end of the season and help this team win? Or, look, there are pieces in place already and I must take care of my body. At some point, he has to have the big picture in mind, and if that's the case, he really, really has to take care of his body and make sure that his knee is ready to go, if indeed he's going to make a comeback.
It's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out. Hercules Gomez, thank you very much. Ali, don't go to your flight school yet. You'll be back for extra time, which will be with you in a moment. Just a reminder, ESPN FC with you. We will take the weekend off, but we will be back on Monday to bring you up to date with all the latest goings-on in the footballing world.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
With thousands of locally owned NAPA stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a NAPA Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at NAPA Online, you can count on NAPA know-how.
Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Gab Marcotti making himself comfortable. There he is, sir. Before takeoff, your captain today,
well,
Ali Moreno.
It's a negative ghost rider. The pattern is full.
First question. Since Gab tips £20, he doesn't tip £20 for his haircut. Your haircut is £12 and you add an £8 tip. Is that right, Gab?
That is correct, yes.
So an £8 tip. How much does Ali tip to his barber, and what nationality is he? This is because, Gab, your barber was what?
My barber is Armenian, and of course, part of the great Armenian diaspora. He grew up in Lebanon, later moved to London.
Right, yes, he's got, we don't need his Wikipedia
he has relatives
page.
Literally
Okay.
I just like to plug my man Aura, okay?
Okay, all right.
If you're ever in West London, Stratford Road, good. Aura is the guy for you.
So you know everything about your barber. I bet Ali doesn't even talk to his barber.
Well, I actually do talk to my barber. Sometimes in quiet moments, particularly now that I have a lot of time in my hands inside my house, I talk to my barber all the time. It's me!
Oh.
I do my own hair!
You could never have guessed, Ali.
Oh, man.
Right, let's get some soccer. Del Piero or Totti, Gab?
For me, while I have a huge appreciation for Del Piero, and I hope he's not listening because I know occasionally he does come on the show, but I think it has to be Totti. His presence, what he means, the story, the fact that one title in Rome is worth 10 in Turin, all these things put together, got to be Totti. But two phenomenal players.
Ali, what's the best football match you've been to live?
Wait a second, I don't get the Del Piero Totti question.
You can have the Del Piero Totti question if you like.
I'm just saying, it's a little bit of that ratio that Gab just put up there and saying, well, one title in Rome is 10 titles in Turin. It seems a little Gab Marcotti-esque, very sort of, I am right, and I'm just going to put that ratio out there, and that's the way it counts, and that's it. Alessandro Del Piero is friend of the show. I'm taking Alessandro Del Piero, and not only am I taking him, he's going to take us out to dinner next time we're in L.A. He has a restaurant in L.A. as well.
Right, Ali, the best football
match. That's reason enough. I may revise my view if Ali takes me out for dinner. We could have dinner with Ali and Ali.
Again?
How does that sound?
Again, I'm going to take you out to dinner. I do that all the time, God.
Best football match you've been to live, Ali?
Not that I didn't play in, of course.
No.
Right? Man, that's a lot. I'm going to go, because of the significance of the fact that I was there with my dad and my brother when it's sort of an old boys trip, and it's really something that lives very deeply in my heart. I'm going to go 1998 World Cup, Brazil-Morocco in Nantes, where Brazil won 3-0. And I remember traveling in the TGV train, a high-speed train from Paris to Nantes with all the Brazilian fans. And it was a wonderful experience and really takes me back to my childhood with my dad and my brother.
Oh, nice, Ali. Right, Gab.
You know, I've been asked this question for the website, and I come up with so many. I'll just give you the one that I enjoy the most, and no, I'm not neutral in this in any way, shape, or form whatsoever. But the 2006 World Cup semifinal, Italy against Germany at the iconic Westfalenstadion in Dortmund, and you probably know what happened next.
We mentioned him on the show yesterday. Is Zinedine Zidane the greatest ever midfielder? Who comes close? Ooh. Ali.
I love me some Zidane. And off the top of my head, you start thinking about, well, what is actually a midfielder? So do we consider Johan Cruyff a midfielder? And if that's the case, man, it's difficult to get to that level. Contemporaries of Zidane and true midfielders, maybe a guy like Andres Iniesta, underrated and underappreciated at times, but clearly a guy that could be at that level. However, Zidane, he's something else.
Gab?
Yeah, look, Ali's right. You know, whenever we form our sort of legendary 11s, we kind of use the definition of midfielder very, very broadly and packing a whole bunch of number 10s in there who maybe didn't do too much defending. I mean, Michel Platini, was he a midfielder? And he did win 3 Ballon d'Ors. While also
Maradona.
Being top
Maradona.
Goal scorer while
midfielder.
Playing in midfield. Diego Maradona, yeah. You want to consider that guy a midfielder? Are we going to change the conversation in that direction? So it's wide open. I mean, he's certainly up there, but if you're going to adopt sort of a definition for more of the all-round, hard-working midfielder who also does a lot of work off the ball, then you get into a whole different category of players. So, yeah, for me, he's obviously going to be in the mix, but you got to use a pretty wide definition, I think.
It's funny that with this three box, normally when you're talking, I can drift off, but I have to still pretend that I'm listening. It's a new feeling for me. Is Gab Italian or is he American with Italian heritage?
Ooh, controversy.
I am Italian. Both my parents are Italian. I was born in Italy. I spent the first few years of my life in Italy. I do not have any other passport other than Italian. And so, therefore, despite my accent, despite that I can do several accents, and we assure you, I am Italian and most definitely not from Miami.
Can you give us a range of accents, please, Gab?
I can really only do two accents. I can do this accent. And I can do an Italian accent. I can do a bad Southern drawl, you know, but it annoys me when people do accents badly. But still, I am Italian.
Did you hear the shot he took at Matteo Bonetti there?
Definitely.
He's not from Miami.
Yeah. Huh?
It was buried underneath all of the range of accents. Yeah. There was something like Matteo Bonetti there.
What are Gab's thoughts on Daniele De Rossi finally winning a league title with Boca Juniors?
Well, it's funny because he himself came out and said, well, you know, I don't necessarily deserve this, obviously, because he left. He never won a Serie A title. He had to make do just with the one World Cup that he won. Boo-hoo. This is a big issue for him. But I think whenever you bring up Daniele De Rossi, it's worth bringing him up just for the fact that he did something that a lot of footballers do a lot of talking, blah, 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 blah. He walked the walk. He could have made a ton more money somewhere else. And he said, you know what? I played for the club I supported as a kid. I played for my hometown club. Now I'm old. Now they don't want me anymore. Do I want to go and still make money for a couple of years? Or do I go for this incredible, iconic club halfway around the world? A club that, you know, I only know just because I saw them on television as a kid, just because of the legend of what they represent, of the heritage that often gets forgotten in sort of this plastic new world of football. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And so he goes to Boca Juniors halfway around the world. So for me, that's something that should always be applauded. I would have loved it if Zlatan had done the same thing. And you know what? I'm going to suggest this. Zlatan's contract is up in the summer. Zlatan, if you're watching this, and I know you're a regular viewer of the show,
yes.
How about you consider that? How about you consider going to Boca, or better yet, go across town to River for a year, just because you don't want to emulate De Rossi, and go and be top scorer in the Argentine League. Just do it for the fun of it. Do it because even though, you know, you're the wolf man and you're a legend and you're a Nordic god, you are getting older. And you may never get a chance to experience this again, playing at El Monumental, playing at La Bombonera. How about you do this?
Okay. Let's get some nitty-gritty, Gab, away from telling Zlatan what to do. All the places possible on your body, why did Gab get that Nemo tattoo on his hip?
Why?
Yes.
It's very simple, because I was underage when I got the tattoo, and I wasn't allowed to get a tattoo, and I figured I put it in a place where most people couldn't see it.
Did your mum ever find out about your tattoo?
Many years later, yeah.
Were you grounded?
No, I was in my early 30s then, so I think it would have been kind of difficult for her to ground me.
What's everyone been watching with no sports? What's been on in the Moreno household?
When I do get a chance to sit down and watch TV, because, well, it's been pretty hectic around here, I've taken off on House of Cards on Netflix, and it's actually been pretty good.
Oh,
I like it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in season two now, so I'm pushing forward.
Oh, I thought you were going to say House Hunters. Oh, which house are going to get? Which of the three? Oh, why do you want that? Can they afford extra rent?
No, not quite there. No, we're not doing that. So I'm doing House of Cards. However, it's not very popular. Melissa, my wife, doesn't really care for it, so I don't know that I'm going to be able to watch it tonight, but I'm going to try.
Gab Marcotti?
It's funny because I would have thought Ali would have been into like Marie Kondo or something, like, because I somehow imagine Ali to hate clutter and like order. No,
well, I do that.
I haven't watched exactly. I haven't watched very much because I don't get those people like, oh, I'm bored at home, because I've actually had an absolute ton of work to do working with Jules as well for Gavin Jules podcast.
That takes an hour.
Continue, of course. Yes, but there's a lot of planning, a lot of tech involved, a lot of other stuff, a lot of time on the phone. Anyway, the one show that I have been watching is on Amazon, and it's called The Boys, and it's basically about superheroes, but then the superheroes are bad. And I recommended it to Lloyd Sam, of course, who was asking for viewing recommendations while he's at home. And Lloyd, if you're watching, hiya.
There we are. Good. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you very much.
What just happened?
I don't know. Who's Lloyd Sam?
Lloyd Sam and I went to the same school.
Well, who is he?
Former New York Red Bull great.
Who's Lloyd Sam?
Oh, I see.
Come on now, Dan. Former Leeds United, former Charlton.
Oh, just dropping his name in. He was an old friend of yours. Right, that is it. We are done. Thank you very much, everybody. We will be back on Monday to answer more of your questions. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. You can keep them coming in at ESPN FC.